Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special episode in honor of Independence Day, triangulating three World War II veterans' memories into a picture of what America represents and why that freedom idealized by our founders 247 years ago is still relevant today. Steve Pisano's passed away in 2016, but if you pick up his book, The Flying Greek, the ace pilot's passion for America jumps off the page. He grew up in Athens, and as it turns out, his path to the cockpit started on the high seas.
I fell in love with the Western cowboys. Mm-hmm. I used to go to the movies and see nothing but cowboys. Tom Mix, Buck Jones, Ken Maynard. I wanted to really immediately go to America, but I had no way, no money. I couldn't speak English. So one of my friends, whose son had been with the Greek merchant marine. He says, you join the merchant marine, and someday, Greek ship, you know, is bound to dock in an American port. Huh. That's where you just get away from the ship and stay in America. In America, you can do the impossible.
So is that how it happened?
Yeah. So I got a job on a merchant ship, and we went down to South America, then we came back to Greece, and then we went out again, and we came to Baltimore, Maryland. It was then when I jumped ship. And
how old were you?
I was about 19, 20.
You're 19, 20 years old.
Yeah.
Your family's all back in Greece.
All in Greece, yeah.
Did they know you were plotting this?
Oh, no, they had no idea.
You just jumped ship? With nothing. I mean, you've got nothing,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. But one of the guys on the ship there, you know, he says, you don't want to become a merchant marine slave. He says, once we get to Baltimore, he said, get away and go to New York. Mm-hmm. You're bound to find some Greeks there. You know, they got a lot of restaurants and so on. And that's exactly what I did.
Could you speak English yet or no?
Not at all. Not at all. Few words.
You jump off a ship in Baltimore. You've got really nothing going for you. No money, no clothes, nothing.
Correct. I had about $5 with me.
And you can't even speak the language.
Exactly.
What in the world were you thinking?
So anyway, I got to New York there and I began to walk. I came out on 34th Street and 8th Avenue. Then I looked across the avenue there and I saw the Greek and the American flag. Oh my God, I said, the Greek flag there. Something. There must be some Greeks. So I crossed the avenue, and it was a movie house playing The Shepherd's Daughter, the first movie ever made in Greece. Oh, my God. I've seen that in Athens, and all of a sudden, two Greek fellows, you know, stopped behind me, and one of them in Greek, saying in Greek, you know, says, what do the Greeks know about making movies? Movies are made in Hollywood. So the other guy said, let's go in and see it. And, you know, if we don't like it, we can always walk out. Then it was then when I intervened and I said, excuse me. I said, what is it you want to know about this movie? You know, I saw this movie in Athens. In Athens? And what are you doing here? I told him what I had done. And he said, where are you going? I don't know. I said, I hope, you know, I find it to park and sleep for the night until I find. No, he says, you know, this is my brother. They introduce themselves. He says, you come with us. We live in Brooklyn. And that's how I really saved my leg coming to America. Once I got established, I got a job on a restaurant. One of my friends there on our day off, he says, you want to really learn how to fly? I said, yeah, I'd like to. But he says, let's go down to Floyd Bennett Field. I'll show you. He took me to Floyd Bennett Field. He introduced me to a guy up there who had two small airplanes, and that's how I began to learn to fly. About a couple of years later, I had accumulated close to 100 hours. I got my private pilot's license. I was able to really learn English and pass the exam. It was then about the war in Europe, of course, had begun. And when one of my friends, you know, I said, all the Italians, you know, invaded Greece and God darn it, if I can really get there. He said, you really want to get to the fight? I said, yeah, but I tried to join the army. They wouldn't take me because I was not an American. He said, how would you like to join the Royal Air Force? I said, what? He said, the Royal Air Force is here in America and recruiting American pilots. You have a license? He says, I tell you, he says, you go to the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City. On the third floor, there is an office, Clayton Knight Committee. walk in and tell them who you are, show the license, and tell them what you want to do. On my day off, I caught the train. I went to New York and found the hotel, and I walked into this office, you know, and I introduced myself, and they took my name and everything. He says, we'll notify you. About a month or so later, I got a telephone call. He said, you have been accepted to join the Royal Air Force. And he said, we have made arrangements for you to attend Polaris Flight Academy in Glendale, California. But I had a problem. I was working at the Park Hotel at this time in Plainfield, New Jersey. How do I tell my Park Hotel owner, German fellow, who had come to Germany the same way I did, and he had really become a millionaire? How do I tell him, you know, that I'm going to leave the hotel because I had joined the Royal Air Force? And one day I said to myself, I got to do it. I got to tell him. So I walked into his office and I said, Mr. Stender, I got to tell you something. What is it, Steve? He said, you want another pay? He had given me a couple pay raises. No. I said, Mr. Stender, I told him, you know, what I had done. I thought he was going to get up and punch me in the face. He got up and he came around and, you know, put his hand around my shoulder, you know, and said, Steve, he says, I admire you for what you have done. He said, and I wish you good luck. And all the time I was overseas with the RAF, you know, he sent me packages.
Well, you talk about care packages from him. I'm curious about your family. Did you ever have contact with your family, and how did they react to what you had done?
After the war.
So they don't know what's happened to you. You
exactly.
took a ship and they never saw you again.
Exactly.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
We'll come back around to that. So you come out here to California to train, and this is before Pearl Harbor, right?
Yeah, correct, yeah.
Because America's not in the war, but
exactly.
the British are,
yeah.
and you want to fly for somebody because your homeland's been invaded.
Correct.
So you become a fighter pilot with the RAF. What did you fly with the Royal Air Force?
I started to fly Hurricanes, and then I switched over to Spitfires.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, I was with the 71 Eagle Squadron. Later on, you know, when America came in, the American Eagle Squadrons were transferred to the 4th Fighter Group.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the 4th Fighter Group ended up the war with 1,016 victories.
Ooh.
Unbelievable. Number one outfit in the U.S. Air Force. I mm-hmm. sat down 10 of them.
Mm-hmm.
6 FW-190s and 4 ME-109s. And funny, you know, years later, after the war, I met Adolf Galland,
uh-huh.
a German great guy, you know. And so he was asking me, and you sat down to ME? Oh, I said, yes, General. And wonderful guy, absolutely superb.
10 planes claimed makes you a double ace.
Correct.
But you're over there flying for the Royal Air Force against these German fighters. I imagine you had more than your share of close calls.
Oh, my God, quite a bit, yeah.
What stands out in your mind? If people read your book, what are the ones they're going to say? Holy moly, is that the truth?
After 106 missions, I was on an escort mission down to Bordeaux, France, and we got into a fight there. I sat down 3 of the guys there, and of course, on the way back, I lost my engine flying a P-51, and I crash-landed south of Le Havre, about 25, 30 kilometers. The Germans came after me. I was trying to put fire on my crashed Mustang, and they began to fire over my head, all over the place. And I got so scared, I dropped everything, and I ran, and I got into a forest. They came into the forest, and it was then how I more or less lost them. And for 5 days, I wandered all over the countryside with an injured shoulder. And then about 5 days later, I made contact with the resistance. Thank God I had learned French in high school in Athens. But I never really thought that I would speak French in America, you know. But it came handy, you know, at that time. And I'll never forget one of my Frenchman friends, you know. He told the other guy, he said, Le Grec American parle français. You know, the Greek American speaks French. And they took care of me so wonderful. And I got decorated by Charles de Gaulle with 2 kisses when I was given the French Croix de Guerre. And about 3-4 years ago, I got a letter from the American Embassy in Washington. Dear Colonel Pisanos, the government in Paris discovered that you contributed immensely for our liberation, and they have awarded you the Legion of Honor, the highest French decoration. They wanted to know whether I could go to Washington to be decorated. I told them that I couldn't make it. They came out here, and they presented me with the decoration at the museum in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And it was unbelievable. There were more people and friends and everybody.
I imagine you received some pretty heady decorations from our government as well.
Oh, yeah.
During the war.
I got five DFCs and the Legion of Merit with two clusters. And
five Distinguished Flying Crosses. No big deal. You mentioned that incident. After 106 missions between flying the Spitfires with the RAF and flying American fighters, you're in a P-51. You're shot up, and you brought it in for a crash landing. Did you think about trying to bail out at any point?
Well, I tried to, but I was having difficulties when I decided not to bail out in high altitude because the Germans were really shooting at anybody coming down in a parachute. So I decided to wait until I get lower, but then as I tried to unstrap myself, you know, I was so goddamn close to the ground, and I had stepped out on the from the cockpit, and I was just ready to, you know, when the aircraft was to hit the ground, you know, try to. But thank God the right wing hit the ground, the aircraft twisted to the right a little bit, and I was thrown way, just missing the prop, the stop prop, you know. And how long I stood right there, you know, lying on my back, and I looked up in the sky, and I said, my God, I said, my shoulder, and so on. And it was then when the Germans evidently had spotted me and followed the aircraft, you know, when I crash landed.
So you weren't even at the controls when you crash landed.
Oh, yeah.
I was
standing outside the cockpit.
Trying to jump.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, my book has the photo on the outside of the book. Mm-hmm. Shows how I'm standing out by the cockpit, outside the cockpit.
Uh-huh. I've seen that photo, and I'll make sure it's on our website at hometownheroesradio.com. So you jump off, you're banged up, you're injured, but the Germans are still shooting at you.
Yeah, and when I saw the bullets flying all over my head, you know, I decided to drop everything, forget about burning the aircraft, you know, and I began to run. And thank God I was close to the forest there, and that's when I got into the forest. And they came along too, and I lost them in the forest, of course. And for 5 days, I wandered all over the countryside, and I drank water from running creeks, and I found a farm, you know, that had cabbage. And my God, I ate a whole cabbage one day. I was so hungry and scared and injured and so on. And until later on, I made contact with the French.
Right, so this French resistance, the underground, gets you out of there. And then did you go back to flying?
No. When Paris was liberated and some 800 Americans came out from hiding,
mm-hmm.
B-17 guys and fighter pilots, of course, we were all brought back to England, and I went back to my unit, but they wouldn't let me fly. So I was returned to the States, and I was assigned to Dayton, Ohio at Wright Field.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I went through test pilot school with Yeager and Don Gentile and all those guys. And I took a good part in testing the P-80, the first jet we had,
mm-hmm.
at Muroc Lake.
I think people are getting the idea from your cross-Atlantic journey that you're plotting and no one else knows about, that you're going to jump off in America, to going over to fly for the British, to all these missions for the British and the Americans, to then back as a test pilot. It doesn't seem like you're afraid of much.
No.
Where does that come from?
I don't know. I don't know. The Greek blood or something. something.
When you think about your own life experience, what's the most amazing part in your mind, the most amazing aspect of your story?
Becoming an American citizen. Honest to God, this wonderful country is the greatest in the world. And I get mad, especially some guys, you know, who one time on the television, he said, God damn America.
Mm.
I told my wife, I said, I'm going to go and meet this guy, you know, and kill that son of a buck, then check in with the FBI. Oh, he says, sit down. Don't be silly. But, you know, this country is the most wonderful country on earth. There is no question about that. And anyone who criticizes America or speaks bad about America, I get mad.
Have you ever wondered how different your life would have been if you didn't jump ship in Baltimore?
I would have probably ended up in Greece somewhere and becoming something.
And speaking of Greece, I've got to close that loop here. You said when you left Greece and you came to America, your family didn't hear from you till after World War II. So how did you re-engage with your family, and what was that like?
I finally got in contact with them, and of course they were surprised that I was still alive. But the funny part was that my last assignment in the Air Force, I got a call from the Pentagon. When I came back from Vietnam, I was assigned to Little Rock Air Force Base. I had been promoted to colonel. I got a call, how would you like to go to Athens as chief of the Air Force mission? I said, come on. I said, who are you pulling my leg? No. He says, this Colonel Hank Stovall, he says, I told my guys to find me a colonel who can speak Greek and fighter pilot and so on. The reason is that the Greek Air Force was looking to buy a new fighter. And they looked at the French Mirage, the British Jaguar, and the American Phantom. And we need someone, you know, who can speak Greek to help us, you know, sell. And my God, that's exactly what happened. They sent me to Athens, you know, and I was the chief of the Air Force mission there. So we had a big competition. So I called a contact I had at the Pentagon. I said, I want you to make arrangements and send me two Phantoms from Germany for a demonstration in Athens. And that convinced the Greeks, you know, to buy the A4. Mm-hmm. And they bought that in 1973-74, and my God, they're still flying it to this day.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to you. A gift to your homeland.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
Well, Steve, I just want to say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for sharing a little bit of your amazing story with us. Is there anything else you think we need to know?
No, I think America has been the greatest, and you better be good to my adopted country, because if you speak bad about my adopted country, I'll get mad.
The late, great Steve Pisanos. Again, his book is The Flying Greek. You can link to that at hometownheroesradio.com. And when we come back, a veteran who, like Steve, had his plane shot down and whose perspective on America and freedom was forever shaped by the months he spent living in the absence of freedom as a prisoner of war. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.